ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्याज्ञनञ्जनशलाकया चाक्षुर्मीलितां येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमापि सच्चिपुत्रं वत्रास्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमरूपुरीं माथुरीं गष्टावतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरं महो राधिकमधावशम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीत्थकृपाय श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। निखिलाश्रुतिमालैरत्नमालदिति निराजितपदपङ्कजन्त आजीमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितस्त्वं हरिणं संश्रयामि। अनारपितचरीं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णाकलः समार्पयितुमुन्नतोज्ज्वलरासं स्वभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतसुन्दरादियुतिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये खन्दरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः। अजानुलम्बितभुजो कनकावदतु सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षु विश्वम्बरो द्वयावरो जुगधर्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो। लालिनीशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गशोहृदाय च भक्तशाक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते। हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धुदीनाबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपीकान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते। राधे वृंदवनादि श्री करुणामृत वाहिनी कृपया निज पादब्जा दर्शन मह्यं प्रदीयतम्। भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराध लक्षाय क्षिप्तश्चाकमादितरङ्गमाद्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणं प्रपानं वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दं वृन्देन्मस्ते चरणारविन्दम्। श्री सच्चिदानन्द गौर हरि की जय। श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री हरिनाम प्रभु की जय। श्री श्री राधा मन मोहन राधा गोविंद देव राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय। श्री श्री राधा रमन जी की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि बोल। प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू कनेक्टेड आल्सो लाइव। यू आर वे मोर देन द वंस हियर बट वी आर ऑल वन फैमिली सो दैट्स इंपॉर्टेंट थिंग। वाओ या like yeah okay we are 15 there okay so we are today celebrating somehow we call it the appearance day of Radha Raman, although technically speaking it's called the Prakatya Utsav, which means like the festival of manifestation. Mm-hmm. Because it, in one sense, as we will see, Radha Raman is not appearing in any normal usual way nor for or a deity and how it's generally manifest. So it's prakatya. No? Prakat means like manifest. Somehow, Radha Raman, as we will see, and as you, most of you may know, is a Swayamurti, which means like a self-manifest deity. So we will try to connect some points with what we were talking yesterday. Today's our second part of how matter can reveal God. God is revealed by matter, part two. Yesterday we were talking about that history in Srimha Chaturdasi and how by the strength of Prahlad's love, God fully manifested himself from rock column, so to say, rock pillar, which confirms two things. One, the power of bhakti to make God appear from anywhere, and two, God's presence anywhere and everywhere. It's there. It's latent there, so to say, it's present there, but we don't see it because, again, we don't have the eyes to see. But when the eyes to see are there, he's fully present in a column, he's fully present in a rock, he's fully present anywhere and everywhere. So we shared some thoughts yesterday, also as part of a trailer to our retreat this weekend on reclaiming our ideals. One of the main ones, at least in my opinion, is reclaiming our lost relationship with material energy and the sacredness of this world, and trying to redeem and heal whatever generational wounds, historical wounds we have been going through, we have maybe carrying in connection to this. So today we'll continue with that. Since I personally think it's a topic that creates its own ramifications of further misconceptions. If we think matter is profane, material energy is bad, then the extension is, again, the world is bad, the earth is bad, the human body is bad, the human species are bad, my body is bad, family life is, well, bad, inferior, at least on a good day. Sex life is ontologically damned, and all these types of sequence of misconceptions that are all rooted into this idea of matter is bad. So once we heal and redeem that root misconception, so to say, all these other ramifications of that one, all this consequence of that one can be also properly addressed, and we can have a healthy Vaishnava lifestyle in the world with family and so on, interacting with this body and with our humanity. Again, humanity is such a crucial ingredient in our bhakti equation. We want eternally to relate to God in his human feature, divine, fully human, fully divine. Krishna is Naralila. It's full human, full divine. So you will never enter into a place that is fully human unless you become fully human yourself. I cannot go with a half-baked humanity to Golok Vrindavan, so to say. I cannot just bring my dysfunctionalities and unhealed trauma and rejection of humanity to a place where there is full humanity and full divinity. So all this that we are talking, as basic as it may sound, it has full repercussions in our ultimate attainment. It's not disconnected from that. Mm-hmm. So we tried to say something yesterday, invoking the prayers of Srimhadev, as we call him, the God of immanence, now, if you will, like God confirming his presence everywhere and anywhere. But this was not yet enough. Then we will invoke the blessings of Sri Sri Radharaman to further pound the post, and make this point clear. Right? Among other purposes, of course, Sri Sri Radharaman is appearing today to also confirm the immanence of the divine in every possible direction. Not only to confirm matter is sacred, but also, again, God is not only over there above the clouds, but right here in the immediacy. Especially Radharaman confirms that, appearing as Murti that you can have darshan of, you can worship, like we are experiencing here in Archana. Archana is a very localized manifestation of God that helps you to conceive, okay, Gornitai are not over there in Nityanavadvip only. No, they're here. Of course, then don't make the challenge is then not to think they're only here. Okay, they are not only there, they are here. But they're not only here either, or they're not only here and there, they're everywhere. But we have to begin somewhere. So we can begin here and now, and from there gradually expand our vision. That's, as we say yesterday, how progress is made. The Kanishta will think, okay, Gornitaya, right here, my altar. I'm probably only my altar, in any other altar, only here. Then you become a more advanced Kanishta, and you will think, okay, Gornitai are in other altars also. Let's be generous with God's omnipresence. And then you are advanced more. Okay, Gornitai is in other people's heart. God is in everyone's heart. And eventually, okay, where is he not? But we start with this localized manifestation of the divine, which helps us to gain this idea. He's not far away. He's right here, right now. Because if we portray God as a distant figure, as an otherworldly figure, limited to a transcendent residence, that can have very dreadful consequences in many ways. I mean, I remember like in the 60s, there was a paper wrote by someone called Lynn White, and the title was like, The Root of our Environmental Crisis. Mm. And basically he spoke about how Christianity in this case, but religion in general, by positing an otherworldly God created these splits between the divine and something else, creating this idea there's something divine, but it's otherworldly, and the world is profane, and therefore it's not to be treated with much respect and consideration. And that created the environmental crisis we are not going through. And he made the case for that, of course. And if you play out the implications of our environmental crisis fully to the point we are now, it's basically, okay, we are on bordering extinction in some level. Our species demise is rooted in big part in the idea of conceiving God as otherworldly. And of course, he talked about Christianity in that connection, but we Gaudias are sometimes not so far from some idea like that. No, many Gaudias, it's not a teaching, it's not Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but sometimes the teaching is misrepresented and Krishna is posited just, he's over there in Leela, absorbed, far away from us. So you create this split, heaven, God, spiritual world, divine, damned, crap-like matter, and we thrown in this whatever hole over there. So we treat matter accordingly, quote unquote, and there we have it. Environmental crisis, self-extinction, and our greatest potential, not only to be enlightened, but also to extinguish ourselves. Krishna says that in the Gita. People can really, they can really create self-destruction, not only nuclear bomb, but again, environmental crisis. So again, Shri Radha Raman is coming as the God of ecology. We can call him in this connection, coming to save all the damage we are doing to Mother, appearing, quote unquote, from a rock, if you want to put it like that. Of course, Shalagram is Bhagavan himself, but from an objective perspective, he's coming from a rock to redeem matter, to show matter is sacred, God himself can fully appear and become worshipable. So let's treat matter accordingly, and let's stop creating this like unnecessary division between matter and the sacred, profane and the sacred, or matter and spirit. There may be some difference. I'm not saying consciousness and matter are exactly the same thing, but maybe the line that divides them could be a fine one, because we can make a fine line between matter and spirit. We can create an abyss that is unsurmountable. And that's what many of us have created, and we are suffering the consequences. So in the same way that Narasimhadev appeared from a rock, from a pillar made of rock, again, Sri Sri Radha Raman appeared from a shalagram, which again, from an objective perspective, can be considered a rock. So in that sense, we can say Radha Raman is the actual rock star. Those are our rock stars, Sri Giriraj, Shalagram, Sri Radharaman. There is some Vedic foundation for the principle of rock star. It's not just some contemporary thing. So today we will tell a little bit the story of Sri Radharaman also. And we can see this beautiful idea between Krishna Leela taking us to Gaur Leela and Gaur Leela taking us to Krishna Leela, because Narasimhadev yesterday is Krishna Leela in the sense that Narasimhadev is Krishna himself. Remember, Prahlad Maharaj's Ishtadev is Krishna. It's not Narasimhadev. So Narasimhadev is Krishna appearing in that unique form. And that Krishna Leela, as we will see in connection to Gopal Bhatta Goswami's life, that Krishna Leela, now we will go to Gaur Leela, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And Gaur Leela will take us to Radha Raman, Krishna Leela, on Vrindavan again. So this way, Gaur Leela and Krishna Leela are intertwining each other and taking us to the essence of each other, which ultimately are non-different. but I want to see the.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope you can hear me there. I'm trying to use my. The maximum level of throat potency at this time of the day for me. It's this. Sorry if it's not enough. So let's begin by sharing a few words on Gopal Bhatta Goswami, because he is to blame transcendentally for the manifestation of Sri Sri Radha Raman. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami was the son of Venkata Bhatta, who was the head pujari in the main temple of India, basically, in South India, Rangaji. So Srirangam is a Sri Sampradaya temple. They worship Bhagavan in Aishwarya Bhav, worshiping Vaikuntha appointed, so to say. So he was the son of the chief priest there. That's a pretty powerful position. As we will see, how Mahaprabhu also is gathering some of his main followers from very powerful backgrounds and using power in service. So power has its place. Mahaprabhu is practical. He's not about just, rejecting. Again, we were talking yesterday, we don't need to reject anything, Prabhupada said. We need to just accept everything in his proper life. So Mahaprabhu once went to South India, as we know from his hagiographies, and he spent one Chaturmasya, 1 4-month period at the house of Venkatavata, and they have very nice exchanges. At one point, Mahaprabhu started to kind of joke with Venkatavata in terms of, okay, who is superior, Krishna or Narayan? And Mahaprabhu will say, well, my Krishna is superior because you worship Narayan, and Narayan is with Lakshmi, but Lakshmi, at one point, she wants to join Rasa Lila. So why? Sri Radha doesn't want to join Narayan in Vaikuntha. When she meets Narayan, the only question she has is, where is Krishna? But Lakshmi was intrigued by participating in Rasa Lila. And of course, Venkatavata will say, like, okay, but Krishna and Narayan are one in Tattva. They are not different. Yeah. But Mahaprabhu say, oh, she wants to participate, but she couldn't enter the Rasa Lila. Why she couldn't enter? There's some qualification that she was not able. In this way, he started like to joke with Venkatavata, but it was a very beautiful exchange. And that deeply impacted Mahaprabhu's presence. Imagine having Mahaprabhu 4 months in your house, without able to go anywhere because of so much profuse rain. So you acquire pretty intense samskaras. Of course, we will say Gopala Bhatta is a nitya siddha, but nonetheless, in the unfolding of the earthly lila, as a kid, he was a child, and he was receiving God in his home for 4 months. So he was there, son of Venkatavata and nephew of Prabodhananda Saraswati, another great personality who eventually joined Mahaprabhu. So it is said that Mahaprabhu reveals his supreme identity to the Gopal kid. No? Gopal Bhatta is a kid. And Gopal Bhatta immediately wants to join Mahaprabhu. No. And Mahaprabhu, very exemplary, says, no, you stay at home. He did that with a few more of the Goswamis. No, don't rush. Don't be like a fanatical bhakta who wants to become brahmachari in a very quick way. Stay here. Take care of your parents, he told him. No, they are old. Take care of them. And eventually, you will be able to go to Vrindavan and join Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. And I will meet with you again there. So Mahaprabhu gives that promise of future darshan. We'll meet again in Vrindavan. You go eventually after taking care of your parents, being responsible in the world. Rupa and Sanatan will be waiting for you in Braj. So eventually, he followed Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He followed the instruction, took care of his parents when they passed away. He joined Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan are getting together in Braj, so to say. And Mahaprabhu gets to know about this. He hasn't seen Gopal Bhatta again yet. And eventually he sends a letter to Gopal Bhatta, and with the letter he sends his kopin, his bahir bas, like his outer cloth, and his asana. So this somehow symbolizes that Mahaprabhu wanted Gopal Bhatta Goswami to be the Diksha Guru among the six Goswamis, which he did. He became basically the main Diksha Guru among the Goswamis. Interestingly, most of the Goswamis never gave Diksha to anyone. Arguably, we will say Rupa Goswami initiated Jiva Goswami. A Jiva Goswami. But apart from him, there is no much knowledge of the Goswamis giving initiation apart from Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And again, we could argue that, of course, all of them were qualified to perform the functions of each other, but Gopal Bhatta Goswami came from such a powerful, prestige background that Mahaprabhu considered, let's use that power in the service of the Sampradaya. No? There's a relative consideration, prestige, son of the main priest of the main temple, but all those things have an influence. And Mahaprabhu was using all that in bhakti. So, some days after, it is said that Mahaprabhu appeared in a dream to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Because remember, Mahaprabhu told him, we'll meet again. So for Gopal Bhatta Goswami, that was the only, okay, he received the coping of Mahaprabhu. I'm meeting him in that way. You know, his asana, that's not small thing. His bahirbas, his upper cloth, all of them are forms of darshan of Mahaprabhu, but still we'll meet again. He wants to have the personal darshan. So Mahaprabhu appears in a dream to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and says, if you want to have my darshan, go to Nepal. Right? So imagine you have the dream here, walk on, it's like, Nepal? What? He's not in Nepal. He knows Mahaprabhu is not in Nepal at this point. He's in Puri. It's not relatively close, but it's close on some level, but it's not there. So anyhow, he goes to Nepal, and eventually he's close to this Gandaki River, sacred river in Nepal, where you found the Shalagram. The Shalagram Shilas come from this particular river, interestingly. So he's taking, he's next to the Gandaki River and uses his, how do you say, his pot, his lota, kamandalu, yeah, to bathe himself, to use water. And when he does that, inside the kamandalu appear 12 Shalagram Shilas. So he's like, he puts them back or into the story. Because it was not his plan to them. So he goes again, and again, 12 Shalagram Shilas. And he pours them back. And again, three times you have to try, no, as you know. I'll say third is a charm or something. Third time, 12 Shalagram Shilas. So the message was clear. So still he was not able to fully connect. I mean, he knew Shalagram are not different from God, but Mahaprabhu say, you will meet me in Nepal, but still he was connecting the dots, so to say. So he starts to worship these 12 Shalagram Shilas for years, and eventually Mahaprabhu passes away, leaves this manifest realm. And so Gopal Bhatta Goswami felt very discouraged, because again, for him, this idea remained, no? Like, you will have my darshan. Like when Krishna left Vrindavan and told the Brajavasis, I'll return. That was the only thing they heard. No? That was the only thing sounding there. I'll return. I'll be back. I'll be back. I'll be back. No? So similar to Gopal here. I'd like to see him again. So good morning. So eventually he was worshipping this Shalagram for years, but also he wanted to worship them. He had this desire of worshipping them, like dressing them, not like with a form, so to say. Not to say that some people gave him some dresses for deities, but he had the Shalagram, so it's like, what to do? No? And again, Mahaprabhu didn't give him his darshan according to what he thought, no? And he had passed away, so no longer possibility of that. So he was in this mood of divine lamentation, divine discouragement, divine depression, if you want to call it. And it was Narasimha Chaturdasi. So a day like yesterday. So now we will see the connection between these two festivities. Very interesting. So on Narasimha Chaturdasi, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was deeply absorbed in the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj and how the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj made Bhagavan to appear from, again, matter, from a column, from rock, and he will say, like, I don't have that bhakti. You know, if I will have just have that bhakti, maybe Bhagavan can manifest, you know, from anywhere, maybe from some of these. You know? He gave the hint and take a particular shape so I can worship them as according to my taste and so on. And in that way, he cried and lamented and fell asleep at the end of that was his Narasimha Chaturdasi. You know, he fell asleep crying, absorbed in Prahlad's bhakti and divine lamentation. So the next day he awakens and he will carry these 12 Shalagram Shilas in a basket. So, and he, the basket will have like a lid, something on the top. So that day he awoken and he saw that the lid was like on the side. So he was careful to see maybe a snake came. I mean, he will live under a tree. So snakes were part of the deal, so to say. So he gets closer to the basket to check if there's a snake inside it. And there was a snake. Yeah. The other day I was studying the Vishnu Sahasranam, the 1,000 names of Vishnu. And one name for Vishnu, which Vishnu is a name for Krishna, actually. Well, Vishnu means the all-pervading one. And one of them is Biala. Biala means snake. No? Because it says that snakes moves in a crooked way. And Krishna is a crooked one in every sense. He's, no, Trivanga, he's crooked in three. His movements are mysterious, indirect, secret, esoteric. Love moves in a crooked way. Actually, that's it. The source of all crookedness, Hari Bhagati Premna Shabhava Kuti Lava Betsi Rupa Goswami. Love moves in a crooked way. Therefore, Krishna, who is God in love, has to be crooked because of the weight of love. There is so much love on him that he cannot keep straight. To keep the weight of love, he has to become crooked and then move accordingly. So there was a snake in the basket, but not the snake Gopal Bhatta Goswami was thinking about, but was the snake Biala, Bhagavan, moving in a crooked way. One of the 12 Shalagram Shila, the Damodar Shila, because there are different types of Shilas, the Damodar Shila turn into Shri Sri Radharaman Ki Jai. So that's what we are celebrating today. One of these Shilas turning into Bhagavan, not being carved by any human, but being carved by the glove of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. That's the actual carving. So in that moment, Gopal Bhatta Goswami realized, oh, this Mahaprabhu's promised darshan. He told me, we'll meet again. And Radharaman is considered to be Radha and Krishna combined. And in one way, we can say Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna combined in some way. So in that way, Mahaprabhu was fulfilling his promise to Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Like at that point, saying, you see, here I am, right? So this is also an interesting point because remember, the day before, Gopal Bhatta Goswami went to sleep appreciating the bhakti of Prahlad Maharaj. And that gave us a result, Radharaman. So someone might say, oh, Prahlad Maharaj's bhakti is inferior. It's not the bhakti of the Brajavasis. It's Shanta Rasa. No? Some superficial critique may come from that place. No? Like, we are not for that. We are not looking for that. We are for the highest of the highest. And we become racist. No, racist in the context of rasa, right? But we see here, if you appreciate the bhakti of Prahlad properly, the end result is Braja Bhakti. The end result is Radharaman appearing. The bhakti of Prahlad is so foundational, as we were talking yesterday, this abhayatva, this fearlessness, and this implicit trust and confidence, and so many other things, right? This being devoid of selfishness and so many things. So that is required to have as a foundation in our Braja Bhakti project. And this is confirming this particular Lila with Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Absorbed in Prahlad Bhakti, and that gives us a result, Radharaman. So again, Radharaman is not carved. Oh, it's interesting nowadays. There are scientists. Last year I met with Srivatsa Goswami. He's one of the main head pujaris of Radharaman. We have a very nice conversation for hours, and we were talking like how scientists have, I mean, they cannot touch and enter into the altar, but somehow they are trying to study in their perspective, like how is this possible? Because it is said that a shalagram, if you try to carve the shalagram, it breaks. There is no way to carve a shalagram. And when you see Radharaman, it's not only carved in general, but it has even teeth. If you see these close pictures, there are teeth. That requires a very specific carving. Everything is... So there's no way to for a shalagram to be carved. That's my point. The only way it can be carved, as we were saying, is by the love of someone. Gopal Bhatta Goswami was a carver here. And there was no installation also, as usually with a deity you carve out of a piece of wood or metal, whatever material. Okay, there's a carving. And for that to be worshipped, generally there is a ceremony called Pram Pratishta, and God's presence is invoked there, specific presence, because again, he's present everywhere actually. But we don't have that vision, so let's invoke his condensed presence in this particular spot. But Radharaman was self-manifest. There was no need for carving. I mean, already carved by Gopal Bhatta's love. No need for installation. That was the Pram Pratishta was Gopal Bhatta Goswami's bhakti. That made the whole rituals and ceremonies and details fulfilled. Right. So Torah Dharma is considered by many to be like the most important deity of the whole of Vrindavan, the deity in which all other deities are present, basically. So it is said that that's what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said once when he went to Vrindavan, and due to his, of course, intense critique of his own tradition, in many ways, all of the temples of Vrindavan closed their doors to him, except for one, Radharaman. And he will tell his followers, no problem, because in Radharaman we are having the darshan of all the deities of Vrindavan. All of them are here. In the Bhakti Ratnakara, it is also mentioned regarding the three main deities of Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govindaji, and Gopinath, to say that the face of Radharaman is like the face of Radha Govindadev. To say that the chest of Radharaman is like the chest of Gopinath, and his feet are like those of Madan Mohan. So all of them are present there. And also another thing that makes Radharaman so special is that only Radharaman, apart from the deity of Vrindadevi, are the two original deities of Vrindavan that never left Vrindavan. All the other deities are replicas, so to say, Prativa Murti. They had to leave for whatever different reasons, invasions and so on. But somehow or other, Radharaman was able to stay. Probably the size helped to hide him here and there. So because of this and many other things, yeah, Radharaman is considered very, very important, very interesting. And also, yeah, the standard of worship is also a very interesting mix. As I was talking with Sri Vatsa Goswami, he will tell me, okay, on one side we have very Brajavasi Vrindavan mood in Radharaman. At the same time, coming from the line of Venkata Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta, we have lots of South Indian influence in terms of standard of worship. And also in terms of cooking, the cooking of Radharaman is another dimension, and it's quite connected to how they cook for Jagannath in Puri. So you have all this like Puri and South India, Vrindavan, and of course Gaur Lila is there, Gopal Bhatta and his descendants. So it's very beautiful, very, very traditional in its own way, but also at the same time very, very dynamic in its own way. I remember talking with Sri Vatsa Goswami, and he will tell me like sometimes they dress Radharaman with clothes that are not like, how to say, typical from Vedic culture. No? And remember, he will pull the cell phone like, did you see today's darshan? Mm-hmm. See, what do you see? No. And he'll say, he has shorts. He has shorts. But there are, is not he beautiful? He'll say, so that was his justification for putting shorts on Radharaman. He looks beautiful. And look this one. He looks like a Mughal emperor here. Right? It's Mughal cloth. It's not from India. But does not he look charming? Okay. So that's their criteria. And I was like, okay, but you don't have like a council and some people are protesting for that. It's not orthodox. No, we are all agreeing. He looks beautiful. That's kind of the main consideration. If charm and beauty are properly evoked, let's bring the shorts. Anyhow. And also Radharaman, one more point in this connection. Raman is a name for Krishna. No? Because Radharaman can be a name for Krishna. No? Radharaman, not the lover, Raman, or the one who gives pleasure to Radha. So it's a name for Krishna. Or it can be Radha Raman. It can be a name for Radha, as we say, Radha Madhava, Radha Govinda, Radha Raman. Raman is a name for Krishna that Sri Radha invokes in the Bhagavatam, in the Rasa Lila, where Krishna disappears. She invokes the name Raman. No? Like in this high point of the Gopi Gita, no? She calls Raman. So Gopi Gita also is the highest point in one sense of the Bhagavatam, where the Gaur Lila, and according to us, appears at this high point. No? Another conversation. We already had that one 2 years ago. But that connects again Krishna Lila with Gaur Lila in its own unique way. Mm-hmm. And one question that sometimes comes is like, okay, Radharaman, but okay, we can say Radharaman is Radha Krishna combined, but if you choose to see the deity of Radharaman as Krishna, what about Radha? Why there is no deity of Radha, which is again something very unique. Although in the past, in the original times, so to say, the original deities of Govindaji, Madan Mohan, Govindadev, all of them were by themselves, were not with Sri Radha. The deity of Sri Radha came later in time, but Radharaman remained only always, quote unquote, by himself. So one may ask, okay, where's Radha's presence? Okay, one way of saying is it's combined, Radha and Krishna combined her. You can even see Radharaman as Mahaprabhu. In fact, Srila Narayan Maharaj will argue that Gopal Bhatta Goswami worshipped Radharaman as Mahaprabhu as a sannyas, and that's why he put him like a coping. Mm-hmm. Sometimes Radharaman appears with a coping. So his conception was like, okay, that's Mahaprabhu's sannyas. And that was, again, for him was, okay, he gave me his darshan again. He's back here. Mm-hmm. But also another way to conceive that is, if you pay attention, in the altar, there's Radharaman, and on his left, there is a place left for Radha, where there's a small silver crown. On the other side, there are all the remaining shilas also. Mm-hmm. But also the devotee, the consideration I was told is the devotee felt, okay, Radharaman is self-manifest. So they felt, we don't want to put a sculptured deity next to Radharaman. Mm-hmm. Of course, sculptured deity is also Krishna, but they felt like, let's leave it like that. But at the same time, they put that asana next, they put some crown, an umbrella, just in case Radha wants to appear at one point. No? That's how they presented. I mean, as Radharaman manifested, we never know. So they leave also the open door for that. And actually, there is an interesting Leela in this connection, because there was a Radha next to Radharaman at one point. And that's at the time when Janava Devi, Nityananda Prabhu's wife, at one point she brought different deities of Sri Radha to different altars. So once she came to Radharaman with the deity of Radha made of solid gold for her to be put next to Radharaman. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami was there at that time. So Janava Devi, she was the head of the whole Gaudiya community at that time, the elder. But again, Gopal Bhatta Goswami felt some apprehension, like he didn't feel like putting the deity, because already he felt, again, Radha and Krishna combined are here present. But at the same time, he wasn't able to deny Janava Mata's request. No? So she was put next to Radharaman. But the next day, the temple was opened and there was no deity of Sri Radha. So they started to look, and the deity was found in some lonesome corner of the whole compound. And they were like, so they put the deity again back. Next day, the same. They open the altar and the deity is not there. It's in another corner of the whole compound. And this continued for several days. Until one point, Radharaman came in a dream to Gopal Bhatta Goswami and said, that deity is not Radha, that deity is my sister, Jogamaya, and you are putting me to sleep every night with my sister. And I have to send her out every single night. So take her somewhere else. That's what happened. So, of course, after that, the confirmation came, the revelation came, and the deity was taken. Some other temple is now in Delhi, one temple there. And Radharaman remains as it is, again, confirming Radha and Krishna are present there combined. They can be worshipped as Mahaprabhu himself. It's a very unique, again, for many reasons, a very unique deity. Self-manifest, again, and coming out of the bhakti of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. But also, as we were talking yesterday and today, with this confirming not only the power of bhakti that can make God appear from any corner of the earth, but also confirming the potential of matter to reveal the divine. The matter as a transparent portal. If proper bhakti is there, it's not that matter is an obstacle for Krishna to appear. Actually, matter is a material energy can be seen as a facilitator. It's not a limiting obstacle, it's a facilitator. So Srimad Bhagavatam says in the first canto, verse 33 or fifth chapter, a thing applied therapeutically can cure a disease which was caused by the same thing. So I like to think of that line in this connection. In one sense, we become diseased if we approach matter with the wrong spirit, with the wrong vision, with the wrong eye. But we can become cured from that if we approach matter, if we reclaim and redeem our relationship with material energy, perceiving matter for what it is. So in one sense, matter is not the problem. The problem is how we are seeing matter. When we find statements in Shastra like the material world is miserable and this is bad and this is, it's not speaking about matter in itself, speaking about our approach, which makes the whole experience miserable. Because on the other side of this scripture, you find the opposite statements. No? Matra is a Shakti of Bhagavan, the greatest Vaishnavi, fully surrender, a portal of the divine, and so on. And so you have to reconcile these two properly. So again, the main point for today, and almost finished, that I want to make yesterday and today and throughout these days possibly, is trying to have a proper idea, as simple as it sounds, going back to Sambandha, having a proper idea of God, having an accurate idea of the divine, as not over there, far away, creating this split between sacred and profane, matter and spirit, heaven and earth, and realizing God is right here, right now, and can manifest at any moment from any direction. As Archana again, and Radharaman, in the service of Archana, helps so much to feel, okay, God is here, and I'm dressing here, and I'm massaging here, him, and this is a microphone, but he's also here. No, he's everywhere. I won't put a microphone on an altar, I won't go that far, but in one sense, yeah, to render seva to Bhagavan, his Archamurti, it's like this type of idea. He's right here with us. He's one of us. No? And we are living our life around him instead of a distant figure in the sky and making us create this unnecessary split. Mm-hmm. So as we say yesterday, God is omnipresent, but are we present there? No. He's present, but how present we are. So in one sense, sadhana has a lot to do with learning to be present to God's presence, learning to be present when we are chanting, learning to be present when we are listening, learning to be present to each other in our relationships, learning to be present. Because if not, we can do everything externally, but internally absent. No? You can be doing puja and your mind went shopping somewhere else. You can be chanting japa for the last half an hour, your mind went shopping somewhere else. You can be related to someone externally, but internally you're somewhere. So presence, now we need to heal our splits and our wounds by bringing presence into the picture, trusting that being in the present will give us whatever we need, and that will give us the experience we need in bhakti. We cannot have an experience outside of the present. If your mind is tripping on the past or on the future, there is no possibility of having an epiphany that happens in the present moment. Because Krishna is a present person. He is fully in the present. So if we want to meet that, it's here. So basically, the Sri Radharaman becomes manifest a day like today for this, among other purposes. Again, to force us to be present to his beauty, to his charm. For those who have the chance of having the direct darshan of Radharaman, it forces you to be there, basically, no? Like to be present, to have darshan, to capture that beauty, that charm in the present moment, and to be open to the possibility of the divine revealing himself through matter at any moment also. So anyhow, some thoughts I want to share today in compliment to Narasimha Chaturdasi yesterday in connection to how matter can act as a portal that reveals the divine, and therefore we are to revere it and treat it accordingly. Shri Radha Manjuki Jai. So we have a few minutes, so if there are any questions also for the devotees connected online, if there are any questions or comments. Yeah, Deva Mahaprabhu.
Yeah, thank you, Maharaj. I'm glad you brought out this dynamic of Gopabhata's previous life, so to speak, mm-hmm. and the prestige of his family within the context of Sri Vaishnavism.
I knew you would like that one.
and how it draws, there's a lot of indication there for how we can engage with things and consider things. So can you give some framing for our present context, how devotees might approach the same dynamics? Gopabhata coming from a very prestigious family mm-hmm. within a certain religious tradition, of course, very close to Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but not exactly, and how that's supported our community over the years, even when devotees just doing his, what's that devotee's name? Man's Grooves. Yeah, thank you. And he's doing his Hari Bhakti Vilas. Mm-hmm. And of course, Gopabhata Goswami contributed to that. Mm-hmm. And the substantiation of our whole kind of Archan process comes from mm-hmm. his presence in Sri Vaishnavism. So I'm just asking, in the modern context, yes. how might we take that as an indication and apply those same principles in areas that devotees might have some prowess in, some strength in, and bring bhakti there? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think you should reply to that question yourself. You are way more capable of doing that than me. You have more experience in that realm for sure. But yeah, I mean, personally, I feel that's a very positively oriented approach in terms of whatever you have, position, knowledge, prestige, beauty, and all this Goswami's, again, wealth. Raghunath Das Goswami was filthy wealth. He was millionaire, billionaire, according. So he is very powerful in that way. Now, again, Gopal Bhatta Goswami had prestige, now Radharaman, Pujari, all this position, social influence, political position, Rupa and Sanatan working in the Muslim government and having very socially political influential positions. So all that is translated in one word, which is power. No, all that is power, 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 power. And many times we hear devotees saying, no, power is not good. That's Maya. That's Pratishtha. No, the Pratishtha is not a problem. Pratishtha means position. The problem is Pratishtasha, which means the desire for that. Mm-hmm. That's the anartha, no? Pratishtasha. Pratishtha is not a problem. Pratishtha is, we want Pratishtha. We want the position from which we can serve, from which we can. I mean, sometimes if you have the adhikar to deal with the position properly, I mean, that creates influence, that facilitates the spreading of the message. So for me, this particular contribution of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, like putting in service all this prestige, like becoming this Diksha Guru, again, Mahaprabhu took this stance. It may seem like very relative, you know, like he's making the Diksha Guru the person with most social prestige in terms of background and lineage and blood, no? It's external, it's relative. Bhakti goes beyond, yes, but also we are talking to the world and there are some codes and some criterion of the time, place, and circumstance, and Mahaprabhu was very attentive to that. So I think we should do the same nowadays. We should first of all like catch the zeitgeist, like capture which are the sensibilities of our time and place, and try to address those in according to the skills and the gifts that every devotee may have, and not propose like a superficial sense of renunciation. No? For mm-hmm. me, Markata Vairagya or the monkey renunciation is not only in terms of I dress like a Babaji and I have like illicit sex affairs in the background. Of course, that's also that. But also it is, I have skills and position and certain potential tools to offer in service, and I'm not using them. I'm rejecting them because, but that's not the definition of Yukta Vairagya. So, yeah, I think Gopal Bhatta Goswami is a very stellar example in that connection of someone with so much renunciation, but so much knowledge and position and prestige, and Mahaprabhu taking so much advantage of that, like saying, yes, I mean, you cannot do it without it. And he made his main architects of the Sampradaya are the six Goswamis, so, and all of them have some of that. He's highlighting that in its own unique way. So I think in our present community, we need to also, that's part of being personalists. Not like, okay, you are a person with your own unique skills, and let's connect those with bhakti. Let's validate your individuality. Let's validate your qualities. Hmm? Okay. That's dynamic. Qualities, individual qualities. Because if we don't do that, that's a form of impersonalism, I would say, right? If we are not fully connecting, allowing individuality to be expressed in the context of seva, that's a form of like sabotaging one's prospect in eternity to individuate and to make that flourish in terms of an offering. So yeah, bhakti is very practical. Bhakti is very, I remember talking with Sri Vatsa Goswami. That was a nice talk. I regret not having recorded that, but anyhow, because I expected again to talk with him maybe a few minutes, and we ended up talking 2-3 hours and so many beautiful topics. And he will tell me bhakti is very user friendly, very down to earth, very connected with the body and the senses. At one point, he told me bhakti is very carnal. No, he will use bhakti is very carnal. No? And he was chuckling, like, yeah, but yeah. And we were talking about romantic love and the romantic love of the gopis and sex life, but all in a context of this is sacred context. So again, all our functions are to bhakti in that sense, all our functions are to be offered. No, Hrishikena Hrishikesh Shivanam Bhakti Ruchate. Krishna is the Lord of the senses, Govinda is he who gives pleasure to the senses, Gopal is he who protects the senses, Gok, I mean all that. So it's all very, so in that sense, my point is, yeah, we should connect our capacities in terms of sensory capacities, intellectual, physical, bodily, position, gifts, and all that can be thrown into the bhakti equation. So of course, we have to find a way, you know, it's not just as simple, okay, just, but there is a place for that. So. Say something else, you, Umala.
Well, Maharaj, I just wanted you to know, you've kind of touched around it, but maybe you could speak something to Gopal Bhatta Goswami's dependence of Radharaman's care on the Grihastha Ashram, and how he very deliberately, because you brought out that point, Radharaman's unique position as the only deity of Vrindavan who remained in Vrindavan.
Yeah.
My own personal sense is that one of the reasons is because it wasn't sadhu renunciates always looking for a way out, and the Muslims gave them one. But Radharaman's care was to the families, and those families never relented.
And I think I told you this, but this is a very interesting one. Maybe I think we spoke about that in Arkansas or with someone else. But if you belong to the, of course, Radharaman tradition, only the descendants of Gopal Bhatta Goswami can worship Radharaman directly. And of course, the descendants are not actually blood descendants, because Gopal Bhatta Goswami didn't have kids.
Right.
So are the descendants of his first disciples. I think his name was Damodar Das and so on. But my point is, they have this policy in connection to your question that only if you, not only if you are coming from this line, you can worship Radha Raman, but only as long as you remain a Grihastha. Because there are a few, most of the Goswamis in the Radharaman tradition remain Grihasthas for life, but some of them have accepted sannyas. Now, a famous one is Atul Krishna Goswami. He was a very famous scholar as well, connected with Pundarik Goswami to his lineage. And when he accepted sannyas as a Radharaman Goswami, he was no longer allowed to worship Radharaman. Sri Vatsa Goswami will tell me that in this conversation we have, no? So like how much is, to which point this is the emphasis of Grihasthas are taking care of Radharaman, that even if you come from the tradition and you are a very renowned personality, scholar, guru of the tradition, you accept the sannyas, you are out of the altar now. I mean, they have nothing against sannyas, of course, but it's this sensitivity of keeping it like a family affair, so to say. And of course, they conceive sannyas as something else, and rightfully so, of course. And they have a more traditional idea of sannyas, so to say, in terms of Vedic sannyas, and this implies this is this, and this is this. Mm. But but yeah, I really appreciate that. As a sannyasi, when he told me, I was like, wow, that's charming, that's interesting. No? And you can feel when you go there and you get into the details of that, how they work in family, and they take turns and worship the deity for different seasons, but they work like a team. They work like a family around this common center. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate how Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who was not a householder himself, he entrusted that. And as you say, he probably foresaw, you say? Okay, this will keep the worship sustainable, because, okay, he was a tyagi, he was a renounced, he will sleep every night under a different tree. And when the moment of passing the worship, so to say, came, and at that time already there were these Muslim invasions and social circumstances, so I think he considered, yeah, this will be very safe, and it proved to be true. Again, it's the only deity that didn't have to leave Vrindavan, it kept there, and you can see how delicate is the standard of worship, and how everything is being taken care, and how their family life experience is enhanced by being crafted around Radha Raman in such a way. So that's why we many times hear about the importance of deity worship in the Grihastha ashram, different ways of doing. In this case, it's only not your deity at home, but it's the deity of the dynasty, and everything revolves around it. But it's the same principle, no? Like how much you can, how nicely the deity is taken care of, and how nicely you are taken care of by the deity. It's like a mutual reciprocal taking care. So yeah, again, that's another way of validating the Grihastha ashram and saying, you don't need to leave the ashram at any point. No, that's another conversation. But there are many sections in scripture that show that. Like, it's not that at one point you need to become a sannyasi to leave the dark well, quote unquote. There is no dark well if you're... dark well is Griha Medhi. You know, you're an exploitative couple between one another, so to say. But if you're a Grihastha, that's an ashram. Ashram means shelter. Why leave shelter? If it's shelter, where are you going? Mm. And you can also have the dark well of monastic life. I mean, everything has its own dark well version. It's not that one is dark well and the other is necessarily enlightening. Everything can be a dark well, everything can be a shelter. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself will sing in Saranagati, I'm seeing Golok in my home. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but he's showing the potential of the Grihastha ashram. You can, the whole spiritual world can be revealed there. So for me, all this is really validating in terms of, again, what we were saying today at the beginning, when we think material world is bad, part of the implied misunderstanding is family life is bad. Mm-hmm. Family life is inferior. Mm-hmm. But in our eternal prospect, in the Leela, none of us will be monastics there. So I have to be careful not to get too attached to being a sannyasi, because I don't plan to be a sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan and Nityananda. So I have to... I'm in a more tricky position in that sense than you guys. So, but yeah, somehow historically, and there are ways to analyze and explain that, how historically the lineage became more renunciation-oriented and more emphasis on saffron, so to say. But I personally feel we need, that's part of the reclaiming of our ideals, trying to bring back the wholeness of family life proper, of course. For that's again another conversation. It's not just merely getting married and that's it, how that becomes a shelter. But if there is proper orientation, family life is a source of, yeah, wholeness and inspiration and shelter and teamwork and partnership and human development, because you are forced to be confronted by the other person. You need to be human and vulnerable and open, and you need to do all those things as a monk as well, but you need to craft the circumstances for you to experience that, because if not, monastic life becomes the supreme evasive methods, supreme spiritual bypassing. It's all your unresolved stuff you run into the monastery and you don't have to deal with anything with anyone, but in time, let's not enter into the details now of what has happened in history as a consequence of that. So yeah, well, anyhow, I'm going in the other direction, but it's all tied to,
yes,
somehow to this point. So thank you for the question. There are some comments here. I don't know if, I think there's one you can check. If you have time, I don't know. If not, another moment.
Siddhari, Prabhu, you have a question?
Yes, Prabhu, I have a question, but Sai asked before we.
Okay, what's that? By understanding an idea, you can say Krishna. How can the gap be bridged practically without going into over frustration regimes? By understanding an idea, you can say Krishna or favorite persons are everywhere and not just far, but that doesn't mean one can truly reciprocate with them in a way one is searching like human. There are signs and evidences one needs or looks for beyond knowledge. So theoretically, we say that Krishna is everywhere, but it doesn't feel very satisfying. He's not in front of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of what we say yesterday, right? I mean, I'm not saying that's the only premise. Like, okay, Krishna's everywhere, so stop complaining and be happy because he's everywhere. Yeah, I know in theory, but I don't have the realization, so I need to find him somewhere specifically. No, and that's why we have, in one sense, the Murti, but also, like Srila Sri Maharaj will say, even Krishna is more present in a more active way in the sadhu, no? So in the person who has Krishna alive in his or her heart. So that's a more concrete manifestation of the divine, even than Srimurti, he will say, I mean, again, he's everywhere, but in according to our capacity of draw Krishna's presence, we may need a living person in front of us who will personify explicitly God's presence. What it means to have God present in your life. Okay, when you get close to that person, we may not have the experience that that person is having, but we will have an experience of being close to the experience that that person is having. And that in itself would be an experience. Mm-hmm. You follow, if someone loves God, by being close to that person, probably it's not that I'm loving God madly like him or her, but I'm having an experience of being close to that. And for me, that will be enough of an experience for that moment. So, but again, that doesn't do away with the idea that God is everywhere. No? For me to have that clear in place, to know that that's a fact, again, allows us to relate to the world in a healthy way, to heal toxic ways of seeing matter, of seeing relationships, of relating to the body, of relating to family life. So there is a place to say God is everywhere and we should do something about it. But also there is a place for saying, I don't have the full vision of that, and I need a more immediate, concrete experience of the divine. And that's what we call satsanga. That's what we call getting together. Not only one single person in the terms of guru, but also circle of friends that are sincere and open. And maybe not any of them are Uttam Mahabhagavats, but they are sincere sadhakas. And with the joint presence of those sadhakas is manifest in an open, sacred way, something very high will manifest through them as well. As we were talking recently, even if we are all Kanishta Bhaktas aspiring to be sincere Madhyams, so to say, but we are sincerely open and praying, something Uttam can come through that circle, so to say. And that's another way of perceiving God's presence in a very concrete, undeniable way. So, yeah, that's what I would say.
Go ahead, Siddhari Prabhu.
Thanks, Maharaj. Maharaj, I have a comment and a question to ask. My comment is first regarding the Goswami and the, as we were discussing earlier, sorry, a few minutes ago, that how Shri Gopalama Goswami, he came with this idea that, you know, it should be the Grihastas going forward who will worship Radha Ramanji. And since then, it is their family members who have been worshiping Radha Ramanji. It may seem, I was thinking about it, may seem like that very much, you can say, they're creating like a difference in a sense that they are saying only those who are born in this family they are allowed to worship Radha Manji. However, on the other side, if you look at it, Krishna is not limited to one form or one deity. For those who really want Radha Raman's service, I know so many devotees who render service to him by sending dresses or making, you know, crowns or making garlands for Radha Manji. And they have had also experiences of connecting Radha Manji all the from a distance. So if, from one side, from one perspective, it could look like the caste or swamis are restricting the access to the deities. But on the other side, Krishna is never restricted. He's always available. So that was one comment from what you were talking about. And a question which I had was you mentioned this in the class that the point to take home is to be present. You know, Krishna is only present, but are we present in his worship? Are we present in different activities? And this is something I struggle with a lot, that because of technology and different resources, now I can do multitasking. I can do so many things all the time to so-called engage in Krishna service. That can be, you know, out washing pots, cooking, and at the same time listening to katha and answering messages, this and that. At the same time, I feel that I'm still one soul. I'm not like Krishna, like omniscient or only like very powerful. So whenever I put my attention to multiple things, it also diffuses my attention. So what's your, you know, practical advice on how to become more present? What are some practices which you follow for becoming more present in your services which you do? And what's your advice to the folks here in the Western world who have so much access to resources?
We need a separate retreat for that topic. But yeah, how to be present, and that's especially challenging nowadays with so much distraction. And practical advice, so let's be ultra practical. Don't check your cell phone as the very first thing you do on beginning the day. I mean, that's not everything, but let's begin somewhere. Do not mark your day like the very first ceremonial act of the day is taking the cell phone and starting to multitask and lose your mind in multi-branched stuff. I mean, it sounds simple, but that sets the precedent for how the day will unfold. And ideally, don't close your day doing the same thing. Because if you start the day and close the day doing that, you are sending a message for all that will happen in between. You ask for something very practical. I mean, I don't have cell phones, so it's not applicable to what I'm saying, but I know that people generally does that. No? They have their alarm in the cell phone. I can understand you pick your phone to stop the alarm, but it doesn't end there. It's just the beginning. So you can get a separate alarm. That's an arrangement. It's sounding practical, but it's protective. And that's on some level, of course, but on a deeper level, I will say, let's take some time to measure the consequence of being multi-branched and multitasking, and you become so multi-present that's a form of absence, actually, right? It's another way of talking about absence, is I'm present in many places at the same time. That's not possible. No, the profound presence is just vyabhyasa yatmika buddhi ekeha kuru nandana. Krishna speaks in the Gita about one-pointed focus. Focus is not so much like, because sometimes, I don't know, we are chanting the name. We're like, okay, I have to focus. And we try to take, we take it more like a personal effort and merit and perfection in attention. But it's more about presence. I have to be present. I have to be present. And something that helps a lot in my personal experience is relationships with other people and trying to have deep conversations with other people in which I really try to even force myself to listen. Now, listening is a very important form of presence, because many times we don't listen. We are just, the person is talking, but we are not fully present. We are half present to the point that we can then reply according to what the person said. So the person knows that we listened, but there was no 108% presence there. Now, there was no like openness, empathy, and connection with the other person's experience. That's another depth of presence. We just capture the words and we can say something in return to that, so we are kind enough and the other person doesn't get mad at us. But that's not presence. That's not the degree of presence we need. So I think we need to train ourselves in that, in presence, in being fully present for each other, listening to each other, accepting each other, and having special spaces like we were talking yesterday, Siddhahari, like the ones like Uchwal Prabhu and all of your crafting for Ekadasis. They are all about presence in one sense. It's not just let's get together, have kirtan, and that's it. It's like let's do it in a very sacred way, which implies becoming aware, being present to each other, what's the influence of that, and trying to remain in that place. And it may be difficult, and it may be training, and it may take time, but I think we need sometimes to take this like separate slots of time to just work on that and be present. And you will have an experience if you did properly. There's no way you won't have an experience. That's the implicit trust you have to have entering those spaces. Like, I will experience some transformation. It cannot not be, because if I properly tune in to presence, something is always going on there. So if you do it properly, you will have the experience, and that experience will give you enough taste and hopefully momentum to, I want to remain in that moment, in that presence, in that space. And then you will probably have the contrast of the multitasking of the present age, and but you have something else to contrast it with. And paramdrishya nivartate, you have a higher taste and it's difficult to go back to the other. Well, it will be still a struggle, but we need to incorporate, I will say, more of these sacred moments in the day and trying to extend them as much as we can and do things with presence as much as we can, whether it's chanting, whether it's reading, whether it's relating to each other, communicating, and taking care, as I said, of some things that we know are affecting our attention. Sometimes you can even read books about that. There are many books, like Digital Minimalism, one comes to my mind, and the other one is what it was? The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brain. No? So these are books that you read them and you become horrified, basically. It's a shock because you realize this is really messing up with my attention and my mind, and this is making me a monster or something like that. And I don't want that. I'm compromising my attention, my presence. That's the only thing I can offer to Krishna. I don't want to compromise my main offering. So sometimes we need to become a little bit more educated in the consequence of that and what's already taking place invisibly. So all the things that I'm mentioning combined may help to create a more healthy lifestyle where we consciously try to adjust how we engage with technology, for example, how we measure all those things, and so on and so forth. Anyhow, again, it's a whole separate retreat we need to do about it, but if you thought so. Thank you for the question, Siddhari.
Thank you, Maharaj. Sign me up for the retreat.
Okay, so far, stop checking your phone first thing a day and last thing for your day. We can begin there.
I'll keep checking my phone for the retreat announcement.
We are ready? Okay, we'll stop here. Thanks so much to all for your presence. And see you later for kirtan. Shri Radha Ramanju ki jai, Shri Man Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Gopal Bhatta Goswami ki jai, Shri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari.